Number 14 of the 48 ways reads b'mikre. B'mikre means with something that is read. Now, what does it mean, something that is read? So in our tradition, we have two sets of instructions. We have the written instructions, that you have to read it, and you have the oral instructions, that you can give over without reading it. The written instructions in English is called the Bible. In Hebrew, it's called the Torah Shebiktav, the written instructions. So b'mikra means that you have to know the Tanakh. The body of it includes three aspects. Tov, Nun, Chof, Tanakh. The first letter stands for Torah. That's the five books of Moses. That's direct, sort of direct communication. It's dictation by the Almighty. That's called the Torah. The second letter, Nun, stands for Nevi'im, the prophets. Prophecy is, the message was given to a man, revelation, and he spoke it in his own words. And then the third letter, Chof, is called Ktuvim, the writings. The writings is Proverbs, Psalms. It's a teaching. It's through prophecy, but it's not a message. It's not a set down, say this, tell them this. Now, there's a difference to each one of these when you get more sophisticated as to how you read. Everything that is in the Torah is repeated in the prophets in a different wavelength and is repeated in the writings in a different wavelength. And it's a different presentation. Now, for a secular man, a person who doesn't know that God gave us the Torah, so then we would just focus your attention that this book happens to be the bestseller, and it has happened to have made the greatest influence on Western civilization. I'd say more than 95% of your most valued values for living are Jewish-oriented and come from the Bible. Freedom, the right of the individual, the dignity of the individual, tolerance, love your neighbor, we are our brother's keepers, are all quotes from the Torah, and many more that you... The concept of democracy is a Jewish concept of democracy, not the Greek concept of democracy. All men have inalienable rights, straight out of the Bible. So a book that had such a tremendous impression and your values come from it is something that you should give quite a good deal of attention and use it if you want to really get on with the business of living. Now, to give you a focus, what it is that you're trying to do, so if you talk about God giving the Bible, which half the world has accepted, so appreciate that. Can you imagine if you were, you know, a ham operator, and over your radio is coming, this is a message from outer space, take it down. And it starts giving you a message, right? Are we going to take it all down? It doesn't quite make sense, you know, but it makes a little enough sense that, wow, where does it come from? Out of space. That's it. You're fascinated. You'll be working at it. You'll be rereading it. You'll be trying to decode it to try to understand what they're trying to tell you, right? Can you imagine half the world believes that God spoke on Sinai? The Christians, the Muslims, and the believing Jews accept this. If you accept it, then you've got to appreciate, man. You've got to pay attention. You've got to decode it. You've got to understand. A lot of it makes sense to some extent, but why, what, when? Well, you've got to get into it. All right, so how do we get into it? So the first thing is that you've got to get familiar. Did you ever read the Bible? Rob, did you ever do it from the beginning to the end? Yeah? Proud of you. Really proud of you. Did you ever do it, Bruce?
Yeah, I'm doing it.
Yeah, you're doing it. Okay, that's the first thing. You got to go through it. But it's not enough, you see. You've got to know it. Having read it one time, what do you think you're going to understand that message from outer space you read it one time? You got to understand it. You got to puzzle it out. You have to assimilate it. But first, you got to know what is there. The second step is that you've got to organize it so that you can have it at your fingertips. The five books of Moses, we have it organized into five books, which are 54 weekly portions, which are 674 chapters. So you've got to pause, give a name to each chapter, have it under your hand. The rest of it, the prophets and the ketuvim, have a lot more chapters. It's much more difficult to organize, but you got to organize it so that you know what's in there, so that you can go looking when you want to. All right, number three is that before you're going to be able to use it, you got to get rid of some of the mistakes that people have when they approach the Torah. See, there's a lot of mistakes that we come from a secular society, and we have certain prejudices, and that bollocks us up. Message from the Almighty is the proper way of looking at it. Now, that is a little different than the sets. It's just to give you some of the sets that people approach. So, one of the early Bible critics, the German group, that's been discredited, but they said they analyzed the Bible, and inasmuch as there are some paragraphs and chapters that speak of the Almighty in the name of Elohim, the E text, there's another chapter that speaks of the Almighty as J-E-H-O-V-A, right? We don't say that name of the Almighty. That's the ultimate name. So that's the J text. And then there's the E-J text. There's Hashem Elohim, right? So you see that really originally the Jewish tribes had different gods. They had Elohim, and they had the Adoshem, right? And then they got together and they merged and they made it the EJ text. You see? This is one of the great perceptions that they brought to the world. Yeah? Now, anybody who has a little bit of understanding would come to a Jew and ask him, tell me, why do you have different names for God? And we would point them to Shakespeare, and Shakespeare sometimes talks about the Almighty. Sometimes he talks about the Prime Mover. Sometimes he talks about the Merciful One. Yeah, say, don't be ridiculous. You're talking about the same Almighty who is all-knowing, all-powerful, the Prime Mover, is merciful, etc. So they don't take the trouble of getting in touch with the Jewish tradition, with the meaning of the words, and they get perplexed, and they make conclusions out of ignorance. Okay, so let me take you a step further. I once came across a magazine from the avant-garde, when the hippies were on the high, and they had a commune that decided that they were going to spend a day, a session, reading the Song of Songs. That's in the Ketuvim, Shir HaShirim. Now, Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs, which the Jewish people say is the Holy of Holy, happens to be a love song between a man and his woman, and a woman and a man. And it symbolizes the Almighty and humanity. Anybody who's read it knows it's a beautiful thing. So they felt its beauty, and they decided that in order to really feel what's going on, the men should recite the lines that the man is assigned, and the women should recite the lines that are assigned to the woman. And they read it through, and they had a fantastic experience. And after the conclusion, the women proclaimed, and this is in the magazine, that finally they found a portion of the Bible that was written by a woman. Because no man would be able to appreciate how a woman feels about these things. Assuming that, of course, this was written by man, not by God, no man could understand a woman's feelings and state them so powerfully. So it must be that women wrote this, and her hermaphrodite was the editor, that understood both. Yeah? That sort of get it both together, because, who was the editor? How do you get the juxtaposition? But not God. That's inconceivable. You got to get out of that fix. Yeah? If you see it, then it's gone. Makes sense. So I'll take it one more step, and that is, there's a book, Worlds in Collision, I think it's called, by Velikovsky. Yeah? You heard about that. Now, Velikovsky comes from the fact he came out with papyrus scripts that actually indicated historically that there were plagues in Egypt about the time of the Exodus, right? And he shows some other historical evidence. So he assumes that the plagues and the manna, everything that the Torah states, the splitting of the Red Sea, everything actually happened. But at the same time, of course, God, that's too much. He's a scientist, right? So he comes out with a book, Worlds in Collision, that explains all this phenomenon. Like the splitting of the Red Sea. The splitting of the Red Sea goes like this. You see, there was a comet, a tremendous comet, that approached Earth at just a crucial time when the Egyptians were chasing the Jews. Yeah? And when they had their back at the Red Sea, so that comet was just in the right juxtaposition so that the Red Sea was torn aside by this power of gravity, right? And there was dry land in between these two walls of the sea. Now the Jews, perceiving this, entered into it, right? They weren't afraid of nothing, you know. They just went, right? And sure enough, the Egyptians followed them. And the Jews got out on the other side just when the comet passed, and the water drowned the Egyptians. Simple, right? You got it? Simple. You don't need God, yeah? Now, what about the manna? I mean, he has all these things. The water turning into blood is because the comet affected the growth of algae, with red algae, and it became solid red, and they couldn't drink it, and the fish died. You know, he explains everything. It was a terrible stench. It's just like blood. It seems like blood. And he goes through the whole thing, the insects, the lice. What about manna? You know, manna, every morning they got out in the morning and they picked up manna and they ate manna in the desert for 40 years. So he says, you see that after the passing of the comet, so the comet left particles of petroleum in the higher atmospheres that was burnt off, you know. And these got into goblets, and in the dew, in the falling of the dew, they fell down. And on the way down, there's a particular type of microbe, a bacteria, that digests petroleum products and makes it into proteins, you see. So they had pre-digested, I mean, they have these bacteria, they send them into the ocean, right? It happened to be that there was bacteria floating around, and as it was descending, the bacteria got a hold of it, pre-digested proteins. Every morning, the Jews picked it up with a dew. 40 years. On Fridays, there was a duffel portion. He doesn't explain that. He missed that one. It would take a little bit of more ingenuity. But you see that, what are you doing? You're standing on your head. If you're accepting this, you can accept it. And I suggest that everybody here really accepts that there was an Exodus. Nobody denies the Exodus. There was a guy, Moses. There was an invasion of Canaan. We went through the desert. I mean, everybody accepts that, but the miracle, well, you've got to soften that attitude if you want to understand the Torah. You see that? All right, there's just one more aspect that I would like to focus your attention, and that is, we read the Bible, we look at it as stories. You've got to get the right attitude. It's not stories, it's instructions for living. So, I'll just give you an instance. There's this story told in the Bible that the Almighty appears to Abraham, and he is sitting at the entrance of the tent. And he lifts his eyes and he sees three nomads walking down the street. And in the Bible it says, he says, "Pardon me, God, I've got some guests." You got that line? Now, in Judaism we say Abraham was a smart man. And this is instructions for living. And this is what the rabbis say. That in case it ever happens, Bruce, if the Almighty ever appears to you, and there's a knock on the door, and you have some guests, yeah, it is greater to give hospitality to guests than to speak to God Almighty himself. That's the conclusion. That's what it says there, right? Now, I would suggest that even an atheist would tell you, if you could talk to God, there isn't anything greater, right? Does anybody think that there's an atheist around that said, if there was a God, and he was communicating to you, yeah, you say, pardon me, Almighty creator of this universe, I got some guests? What do you say? Is that mind-boggling? They're nuts. Fanciful. But are they that stupid? You see, the way you read it, this just doesn't make sense, yeah? You got to have a little respect for it. Yeah? Instructions for living. So let's take it a step further. So it says, so he goes out to the guests and he bows down flat. He prostrates himself, you know, flat on the ground. And he says, my masters, please come to the house of your slave. A little oriental excess. Huh? Unbelievable. But you got to get the picture. You know, that isn't enough. The Torah says that Abraham was filthy rich. He was filthy rich. The rabbis explained that the people of his time said it's better to have the fertilizer concession of Abraham, yeah, than all the money of the kings, all the treasuries of the kings of that time. You understand? The fertilizer concession. If you sold the manure of Abraham's cows, you'd be a richer man. Yeah? You got it? Phosphates. Yeah? Right? So can you imagine Rockefeller? You know what rich men are, right? Multi-billionaire, taking a guess, prostrating himself. My master, come to the house of your slave. Unbelievable. Besides which, he was a leader, the Torah says, Nasi Elokim at Besochenu, that the people of his time called him our king. Besides which, Vayikra B'Shem Hashem, he was a teacher, he was a world-famous teacher. It's a little too much. Huh? So here you have to have the tradition. The tradition tells us that there was another man who was a president, Rav Gamliel, elected president of the Jewish people. He was a great teacher, and he was fabulously wealthy. And he happened to have married off a son. And he had guests at his son's wedding. And he was serving the guests. You get that? This happened many years later in the time of the Second Temple. And he was serving his guests, and some of his guests were his students from his academy. Yeah? Now you can imagine Regan serving the guests at his daughter's wedding, you know, right? And he's serving the guests. So one student says to another, he says, tell me, is this right? Is this the honor that we owe our teacher, our president, that we sit here and he serves us? So the other one pokes him back and says, hey, we found greater than him who did it. Abraham. He served his guests. He's greater than Gamliel. So the third one, Sumchis, says to both of them, he says, hey, what's the matter with you? Until when will you discuss the honor due to human beings and forget the honor due to your Creator? Who takes care of you? Who sees that you have food? Who digests your food for you? Who lifts your arm? Who serves us? The Almighty Himself. So do you fathom what the Torah is telling us? Even an atheist knows there's one thing greater than having God reveal himself to us. And you know what that is? You be like him. Become like him. Now what does it mean to be like him? Focus. If God created this world and he created these trees and he's moving our hands and he created us for our pleasure, this world is one hospitality inn. You be the inn master. Serve your fellow man, you are like God. And now you see that's a genius. It's good food for thought. So if you're in business or in physical education or fighting the pollution environment of a law or a lawyer to get more justice into the system, it's always, we got to do something about making it a better world. You got it? What do you need to make a better world? Go enjoy yourself. No. I want to make it a better world. I want some meaning in this. Yeah? I want to be a little bit like God, if not big like God. All right. What I'm showing you is that when you see a story there, don't write that. This is a genius. You got to look into it. You got to delve into it. Don't take them to be, you know, telling stories. Yeah? That's the only way you can approach it. Give it weight. All right, so number four is that, at the very least, read intelligently. Read intelligently means ask yourself, what does this mean? What is being said here? So if you read the whole thing, you remember the part, Rab, that it says, see, I put before you today good and evil, life and death, blessing and a curse. Choose life so that you may live. Now, you've got to read it intelligently. What does C mean? What does the Almighty want you to look at this? C means clarity. I put before you today. What does it mean I put before you today? This is the communication. It's now, for now. And this is all I came to teach you. What is a blessing and a curse? How to have pleasure? Blessing is pleasure. And avoid barrenness and empty life. Good and evil. What is good? What is evil? Good is heavy, responsibility, right. Evil is empty, nothing. Life and death. What is life? Awareness. And what's death? Zombieism. I taught you how to be aware, be heavy, and have pleasure. Choose to live. It's telling us nobody wants to be empty. Nobody chooses meaninglessness. People choose death or life. What does that mean? Either to quit, to turn off the seeking, to run away, to turn into a game of solitaire, into zombieism. You know solitaire? Red queen, right. Don't step on a crack. Pardon me if there's solitaire players here. But it's some way of focusing out of living, of running away from life. And there's many ways of running away from life. Getting angry, quitting, depression. Yeah. Reading a newspaper that you read 15 times already. Seeing a movie that you've seen, you know, Late Late Show for the 7th time, and your mind is cracking, but you don't feel like going to sleep, and there's nothing else to do. You can't think about life. Yeah. Escape. These are the choices. This is the categories that human beings are looking for. Pleasure, heaviness, and awareness. Meaning. Now, is there other categories? This is it. And this is the choice. And this is what the Almighty came to teach us. Okay, so you see it. You read it. Then you have a set. That's reading intelligently. Paying attention. Right? So number 5 is that you have to get the practice and the rules and the techniques to approach the genius of our Torah, to give it a good hearing. We teach you here the 48 ways. We constantly repeat what, how, why, what. Define your terms. How do you use it? Why do you need it? We want to drill it into your bones, but you need all of the tools. 48 tools. That's the way you approach it. Then you can take a look. You'll see. You'll be aware. You'll appreciate what's being said. Number 6 is, what do you use the tools on? So there's the basic instructions. The basic instructions are things that we know are meaningful. We know we should do. We know that they got to get done. We just have to figure out how. It says, love your neighbor. What does it mean, love your neighbor? It's an obligation. Read it intelligently. Don't go quoting it. Love your neighbor. You should love humanity, but love is a happening. You fall in love. No, you work at it. You work at love for your children, your wife, your parents, your friends, your neighbor, and humanity. That's intelligent reading. You see things. They bear weight. You know that it's instructions. It's good. You got to figure it out. How, when, where, how, why, what, and a few other techniques you kind of pick up. Number 7 is that there are things that are obviously important, but we don't quite know what the instructions are. It takes a little more, like the flood. Why the flood? I mean, why did the Almighty wipe out all of humanity? There's a story of the flood. Why was Noah saved? So you got to focus. What is the message telling us? And you see, in the Babylonian story of the flood, is because he was a favorite of the gods. The gods snuck him away and saved him. Yeah. And Judaism, the story, and Torah, the story is that Noah was a righteous man. He was a man who did what was right. It's the righteous that are saved. So, what was wrong with mankind? And you take a look. What was wrong with mankind? They were idol worshippers. They committed incest. And they were murderers, very much like today. And what was the worst thing that they did? And in the Bible it says the worst thing that they did is they were callous to their fellow human beings. They would let a poor woman be stabbed 70 times and they wouldn't pick up the telephone to call the police. And that's why the Almighty brought the flood. What do you mean? Murder? Adultery? Incest? Idol worship? He didn't bring the flood. He says to Noah, because it's callousness, I'm going to destroy them all. What does that mean? I mean, you know, murder. Yeah? And you won't really understand it until you have children. And you'll see, that crimes of passion, their laziness, even their stealing, you can bear with. You're worried about it. You're upset. Yeah? But when they're mean to each other, that's it. See, if we don't give a hang about other people's suffering, it doesn't matter to us, then we've turned into the ultimate animal. If you have a crime of passion, you murder someone because you're angry at him, because he's standing in your way, yeah? Okay, that's a moment of being an animal. It'll tell you about our condition, about today, about who we are. Number 8 is, there are things that are not so obvious. Adam eating from the tree, yeah? And that bringing death to the world. Well, that's obvious, important, but at the same time, the tree and the snake, and it shouldn't eat from it. It sort of makes it not so obviously important. So this is like a case where it's not obviously important. So let me explain that case to you so that you appreciate. Here is a story that sounds like a real fairy tale. The tree of knowledge, tree of life, and they're right in the middle of the garden. That's where they should be, right? It's symbolic, fanciful, interesting. And the Almighty says to Adam, from all the trees, and there's many wonderful trees in the garden, from all the trees shall you eat. But from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, don't eat from it. And he takes the trouble to explain why. It's not that I don't want you to eat from it. But on the day that you will eat from it, you will die. This is what it says. So the question you've got to ask, you see, this is the way we learn now in Torah. Did he create a tree, a very desirable tree, knowledge, good and evil, and say, don't eat from this? Did God, our Father, create a trap for us? A tree that's desirable not to be eaten from? So sure enough, Adam eats from the tree of knowledge. That we understand. What you're told not to eat from, that's the first thing you go to eat from. Right? And the Almighty says, now, what are we going to do? If we leave him in the garden, he might eat from the tree of life, and then he won't be able to die. So he throws him out of the Garden of Eden. That's the story. Yeah? There are a couple of questions. The question is, did the Almighty create a tree that you shouldn't be eaten from? So then you ask another question. Is there any way that he could have eaten from this tree of knowledge? What do you say, Jeff? Is there any way that he could have eaten from this tree of knowledge just from the facts that I told you? No way. How about you?
Certainly, if he ate from the tree of life
first. Good, Scott. Gorgeous. Yeah? Scott says if he would have eaten from the tree of life, it says that after he ate from the tree of knowledge, if he would eat from the tree of life, he won't die, right? So if he would have eaten from the tree of life first, then he couldn't have died if he ate from the tree of knowledge, and the Almighty only told him, don't eat from it because you will die. Beautiful, Scott. Yeah? So, the Almighty said, eat from all the trees. If Adam would have followed the instructions and eaten from all the tree of life is there, he would have eaten from it. Then he could have gone on and eaten from the tree of knowledge. And that's what it was created for, right? So we say, isn't that terrible? All right, but still, it's so fanciful. It's so fanciful, yeah? And yet, you see, what does these terms mean, the tree of knowledge and the tree of life? Does anybody know what the tree of life symbolizes to the Jewish people? No? Nobody here came across it?
Torah.
Torah. We say, Eitz Chaim Hi. I mean, if you know, if you go to a shul where they sing a little bit, this is what they sing. Eitz Chaim Hi. L'machazikim bo. It's a tree of life to those who hold it, right? And what's the tree of knowledge? Experience the world. Let's try some Coke. Experiences. Let's travel in Europe. How about a guru? Let's see how everybody lives. What are you living for, son? I don't know, but experiences. You see? Every human being knows that first understand what life is. Get awareness. Know how to judge experiences. If you don't know how to judge experiences, what good will experiences do you? It's death. It's death. It's a wipeout. You won't know what's valid or what isn't valid. First understand who are you? What are you living for? What do you want? What's your pleasure? How do you get it? What mistakes do you make? And what makes you stupid at different times? I mean, you know sometimes you're stupid, yeah? So first, get yourself the tree of life. Awareness. Torah. But everybody says, I'll get back to it, Rabbi. When I'm 60, when I retire, I'm going to go and learn all about living. Yeah. But first, a little experience. 3 divorces, and then, you know, right? You learn from experience. Yeah. Isn't that the condition of man? We don't have the patience to get to know ourselves, and we want to learn from experience. That's reality. It's crazy to go out and I don't know what I want, what I'm capable of, what's this greatness, what's my desire, what's pushing me, what's my pleasure, what sets me off, why do I get depressed? Crazy, yeah? Okay, now you want to do something nuts. That's all right, but at least know, this is it. It's not all right, but at least you've got it clear. You've learned something from the Torah. All right, number 9 is that it goes beyond this, you see. In Torah, we say, Lo dovereik hu mikem. That the Almighty, everything that it says in that Torah is instructions for living. So each piece of information, if it's a name, how many children Abraham had, it's there to teach us something we don't know. You know, it's not that obvious, but that's the way you have to treat our Torah. It's all information, like the tree of knowledge. It's all to teach us how to live. That's what it is, instructions for living. It's not a history. It's not reciting names, years. It's all instructions for living, and we don't always understand it. But you got to keep reaching. Number 10 is that, look, you've got to appreciate that in order to understand that Bible, there's no way you're going to really understand it in translation. You're going to have to learn Hebrew. Or else you have to have a thoroughly experienced guide through. You still need a guide. But, you know, in my days when I was going to university, they used to say, all translators are liars. Do you understand that one? So if you're going to read the Bible in translation, you'll come across the word, and if you sin, yeah? You say, sins, Christian, you know, evil, that's not Jewish. We say all human beings are good. They want pleasure. That's what he created. Anybody doesn't want pleasure? Nonsense. Nobody wants to sin. Yeah. But what is it? In Hebrew, the word literally means mistake. The translator says sin. It doesn't mean anything. A mistake, if you literally translate it as a mistake. If you make a mistake and you waste your time. If you make a mistake and you hurt your brother. If you make a mistake and you follow it. Then it makes sense. So you've got to learn the Hebrew. All translations are perversions. Number 11 is that the idea is use this as the all-over world almanac encyclopedia. You get it? You got all the answers. Yeah? So what do you want to know? You want to know about love? You want to know about studying Torah, about loving God? About look through your indexes. Yeah. Where would it be? How many times is love mentioned in the Torah? Where does it say a man loved a woman? It says in the Torah, Vayoda Odom Eschava, he knew her. He knew her. Look it up. Teach you everything that you want to know about living, and a heck of a lot that you never even dreamt was around. It's there, but you got to know it well so that you can seek it. It's all there. Go look for it. You'll find it. All right, number 12 is that Jewish consciousness was that we studied this Torah, this Bible, in unison 4 times a year. According to our instructions for living, every Jew is supposed to review with all other Jews the portion of the week 3 times before he comes on Shabbos to read it together in Shul. So 4 times a year we reviewed it, and we studied it. We would ask each other questions. We talk about the subjects. What did you see? What was difficult? What don't you understand? Because seeking it, it's all there. It's a hidden treasure. Okay, now why do we need this? So, look, simple sanity. If you believe God spoke, don't ignore him. You know, message from outer space, you'd be working at night. Let's see, what did they say? Is that right? The Almighty created this universe. He says, I come to give you life. Come to give me life? Yeah. Pleasure? Yeah, heavy. Meaning. Yeah, work at it. Yeah. Sanity. And if you don't know that, it's the Almighty. This is the book that changed the world. 50 years ago, it's 100 years ago, they were still writing poetry in the praise of war, the charge of the light brigade, right? We said, no, war. That's terrible, war. Peace on earth. Universal peace. You remember? We taught it to them. Yeah. So you better read up. Understand it. All right. So I would suggest that just as an exercise, take a list of the 48 ways, and then look up which paragraph of the Torah is the commandment to learn Torah, to learn wisdom. Yeah. Now, you won't know how to look it up, so I'll give you it. It's the Shema, Hear, O Israel. Now, if you count the words in the Shema, there are exactly 48 words. Take the list of the 48 ways and see how many of them can you identify as a word in the Shema. Anybody who gets 48, we give him his rabbinical decree after 6 months. Anybody who gets 20 is of superior intelligence. Less than 10, we throw you out, so don't tell us.
You have been listening to Voices from Jerusalem. For a complete listing of our cassettes, see our web store at aish.com. For a free cassette catalog, email us at voices@aish.com or call toll-free in the U.S. 1-800-VOICES-3. Our main office is at 1 Western Wall Plaza, Jerusalem, Israel. Shalom from Jerusalem.